Today's show is brought to you in part by AdamandEve.com.
Hey, Feast of Fools listeners, we have a special offer just for you.
Go to AdamandEve.com and get 50% off just about any item when you type FEAST for the offer code COUPON at checkout. Plus, with your order of $17 or more, we'll throw in a free gift.
Get half off with offer code FEAST at AdamandEve.com.
And remember, folks, it's AdamandEve.com, not Adam and Steve.
What are some of the big issues facing gay men's health? On today's show, we've got the fabulous Jim Pickett, Director of Advocacy for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago and blogger for LifeLube.org.
Jim just got back from the National Gay Men's Health Summit, and he's here to give us an update on what new research is showing on the safety of sex without condoms between two HIV-infected men.
Gay is good, but are we tapping into our strengths as gay people in order to fight disease and discrimination?
What is the ultimate taboo? Is it your booty? Your tunnel of love? Join us on Tuesday, November 18th at the Center on Halsted for the Tunnel of Love, a bootylicious live podcast forum on sex, health, and your booty, keeping it hot, what sex will be like in the future, and sharing the secrets of the porn stars.
Woohoo! How to keep your butt safe before, during, and after sex. Why are guys that are so high-strung and upset easily enjoy the pleasure of anal delights?
The Carpenter's Halloween.
The Potty Mouth Payout.
And why Obama just might be behind our panda-themed Halloween costumes.
I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Hillian.
And this is Feast of Fools. Vote, baby, vote. Feast of Fools is excited to be nominated for the Podcast Awards in the top category, People's Choice, and Best GLBT Podcast.
Please go to podcastawards.com and vote once every day until November 6th.
A vote for Feast of Fools is a vote for fabulousness.
Do you guys sometimes do it with two people?
Sometimes we do. Sometimes we've done it with up to five or six people.
Really?
Yes.
Woo!
The Hello. Podcast, that is.
Yes,
there's
Jim.
A lot going on here.
On today's Feast of Fools, we have the delightful Jim Pickett, blogger, writer, intellectual pundit, activist, and a director of advocacy and health for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago.
Hello.
And you run a fabulous blog at LifeLube.org.
Yep. That's right.
So you just got back from the National Gay Men's Health Summit.
Yes.
Exactly. What is that exactly?
It's usually a biannual. This was a triannual summit. Gay men getting together, talking about health, holistic health. So we were in Seattle for 4 or 5 days.
You know, in French, we call that a ménage à trois.
A ménage à...
Well, triannual.
Oh, know. Right. I was like, where are you getting the trois thing? Okay. We try to do it every couple of years.
Bad
and
joke.
And it's Sorry. Really looking at... It was kind of bad. We're just talking about gay men's health from a holistic viewpoint. And from an assets kind of base.
What does that mean?
Assets base. We talked about it a lot. Well, instead of having the narrative...
About their butts?
Instead of having the narrative that, you know, gay men are bad and reckless and awful, starting that that's not the case and that we're able to deal with our challenges from a place of strength and creativity and smarts and savvy, just like we did with the AIDS crisis in the beginning.
Oh, assets sort of focusing assets. On the positive.
Yeah. Instead of, because you know, the narrative that we often tell ourselves too is gay men are bad, we're dogs, we're reckless, we don't care about each other.
We're drunks, we're on crystal meth.
Right.
So can we make like bumper stickers and t-shirts since the Harvey Milk movie is just around the corner, about to win lots of Oscars for everybody involved.
I hope so.
How about we quote Harvey Milk and create t-shirts that says, gay is good.
All right.
It's so hard to hear that. You know, even in 2008, like we've been creating these panda bear videos on our websites and we've gotten
Pandas
some
are good.
Feedback from people that I'm not going to say because I think it's kind of embarrassing. And they said, if you didn't make the pandas look gay or relate to each other on a romantic or sexual level, that those panda bear videos would be more popular. And I think that criticism illustrates something about ourselves, that we ourselves as gay people feel that we are holding ourselves back.
Well, we're often the most homophobic of them all, right? I mean, you know, you have these legislators who are virulently homophobic, passing awful laws, and it turns out they're tapping toes in bathrooms. You know, I mean, so often, our worst enemies are ourselves, and we internalize homophobia just like the outer world inflicts homophobia on us.
So how does this look, this idea that our core essence, our being gay, is our greatest health challenge? The way we look at ourselves in a negative way.
Yeah, I mean, I think being gay is our greatest asset. Like, gay rocks, okay? Like, gay kicks ass. I'll quote Fred Swanson, who's this executive director of Gay City in Seattle.
So an executive director talks like that?
Yeah, he wrote a piece. He
like
wrote
a valley
piece,
girl.
He wrote a piece for Life Lube, basically talking about, you know, we have the strengths and the assets to deal with anything, and gays kick ass. I mean, he was doing it in a very fun, cheeky way. He's very smart, but he did it in a way that was accessible and fun, and it basically spoke to, let's cut this shit. It doesn't say that we don't have problems or issues, but let's just turn the narrative around instead of being like, oh, we're awful and we need to be fixed and this and that. Say, you know, we're not awful. We're great. And there's a lot of great things about gay people and gay culture.
This is kind of like a big turn that this whole aspect has been taking, hasn't it? Just like recently. I mean, 10 years ago or 5 years ago, or even a few years ago. And now it seems like, I don't know.
Well, it's kind of like the made-for-TV movies, you know, approach to fighting, you know, health problems and substance abuse problems and civil rights issues. It's sort of like poor me, victim-oriented policies.
Starring Valerie Bertinelli.
And now we're sort of like looking at ourselves on what's been working. So what is good about being gay specifically? What works well?
Well, I think we bring a very interesting perspective. We bring kind of that outsider perspective. We're able to see things differently. I think in many cultures, we have been healers. In Native cultures, we were healers or we were shamanistic. We were able to see in the future. We had special powers, and I still think we have that. I mean, we play that role, but it's just been really denigrated by our kind of current, the climate that we're in and our society, which is sex phobic.
But I predict that in this next year, that Obama-esque politics, which is valuing the outsider perspective as a fresh way of looking at problems, is going to be really, really big.
Yeah.
And the gay and lesbian voice, and the transgendered intersex voice, is going to be huge. And I think, you know, we're on the precipice of a really big change in our society and the way we solve problems and the way we look at them. So
yeah, I think a new day is dawning.
It is. Literally. Really? I mean, it's not just a cliche and icon.
I mean, it feels very cliche. It seems silly to say a new day is dawning, gay is good, brighter tomorrow, but it really does feel like we're moving into a new, I mean, there's a shift happening. And American culture shifts like this every couple of decades, right? We've had shifts like this before.
So get your booty ready.
We've been in the real shits for the last, you know, 20 years or so. I mean, with Reagan and Bush bookending, it's not been
lovely. But you know the thing, though, Jim? It's that when people are leaving a bad relationship, they tend, it's sort of like, you know, when you've been in a marriage for 8 years to this abusive husband named George W. Bush and the Republican Party and the bad economy and all these things. And you go into something that is functional, that does work. Sometimes old habits are hard to break.
Yeah. Will we be able to adapt is what you're asking?
That might be a problem that we might be able. We might be
going to sabotage this great new relationship with that hunk Barack Obama.
So you got back from the Gay Men's Health Summit.
Yeah.
And one of the big topics or one of the big things was superification.
Super infection.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading my sheet too. Super infection.
Your cheat sheet. You need to fix your hand writing over there.
Super infection.
Yeah.
Fantasy.
Well, it sounds like it's more fantasy, and that the facts aren't bearing out. I don't want to go into all the specifics of this very kind of complicated paper that just came out. We posted it on LifeLube.org if you want to go look. Just a few days ago.
I have to tell you, though, you have to have a medical degree to make sense of it a little bit.
Well, but there's sort of a, if you read the,
I try to understand
the post, the post was basically just a press release, which makes it easier than the actual paper, which we linked to. The paper, I mean, there's a lot of scary charts and graphs, but here's the long and short of it is that it doesn't seem that there's very many cases of superinfection in the world. There's just been a handful documented over the last several years. And in this study of between positive men that they did in San Francisco, they didn't see super infection. They saw the ability for, and this is among men who are having unprotected anal intercourse with each other. So two positive guys fucking each other without condoms. And the, you know, they were able to handle the other person's virus, being exposed to the virus. Their immune systems were able to shut it down and not let it take hold and create sort of that idea of a super infection. So it's pretty major. It's pretty major. I mean, there, I think there's still a lot of questions, and the authors themselves say there needs to be more study.
So this study just came out because anecdotally we've been talking about this for a while now. So this is the first time the study's been published?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think gay men have been doing this strategy for a long time without any science or research to back it up. They're just knowing intuitively, like, well, you know, if I want to have sex without condoms, I'm positive. I'm going to do it with other positive guys. At least we won't have an issue about HIV. And that was sort of their viewpoint, like to protect other guys from getting HIV and having the sex they wanted. So, you know.
So they were looking at the way the immune system of an HIV-infected person works when they're re-exposed to another HIV strand.
Yeah, and I'll explain really quickly how it was explained to me. If I'm HIV positive and my immune system is always several months behind my virus. So it's always adapting, but it can't quite catch up and really control the virus. But when I'm exposed as an HIV positive person to someone else's virus, my immune system is better able to just sort of shut it down because of it's ready to go and it hasn't been exposed to it already. So it doesn't have the same sort of mutations or whatever, and it's able to just knock it out. That's what they basically found. I would recommend going to read it and getting a better description than what I just gave.
But. Well, what do you say? Because when we talked about this in June, when we had the forum on what gay men want, people had a really, really bad reaction to the idea of two men that are HIV positive having sex together.
Right.
Because they still fear, even though the science is now there about some kind of superbug or super infection. What do you say to these people? Because they're probably still going to have that same kind of reaction.
I think we just have to do education and awareness, and we have to show people the data and give people, you know, and let people make decisions for themselves. Some people won't be comfortable with that, but the data is not showing. I mean, in the world, there's been like 40 documented cases total of super infection.
Where do those unlikely super infections come from then?
Well, you know what? I'm not the guy to explain all the science and how this works. I mean, you know, I'm an advocacy guy. Hello.
Well, the gist that I'm getting from looking at it myself, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they're saying that there needs to be more studies, but the preliminary look is that if you're HIV positive, that using condoms is not that much of a big issue with dealing with somebody else who's infected as well.
Yeah, I think the caveat though is there's other STDs, so those are of concern, and
those STDs will compromise your immune system.
I mean, something like syphilis can compromise your immune system when you have HIV. Syphilis can move more rapidly with a system that immune system that's fighting off something like HIV. So it's, you know, it's recommended if you're going to be having unprotected sex with other positive guys, you should be getting tested for syphilis every 3 months, making sure you're getting your regular checkup so you're getting treated and you're not passing it on and you're not letting it, you know, fuck you up.
And what happened to our friend Victoria, who used to do the show with us? She had HIV. She was she had full-blown AIDS, but then she had, what did she have, anal warts? And had to have them removed.
Surgically removed from
her butt. And it was like, it was a painful ordeal that took like a month for her to recover. Could you imagine not being able to poop, or when you do poop, like ripping up, you know, open wounds?
Oh, that's awful.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just give me a colostomy bag.
So why is all this attention or focus on saying, I guess that it's sort of analyzing the use of or the function that condoms have in HIV positive populations? What roles do condoms have?
Well, I think condoms are still really important for negative men. Condoms are still really important for HIV positive men who don't want to risk getting exposed to other STDs. People still like condoms because it makes cleanup easier. Some people like condoms because it's actually sexy, you know, like that anticipation of opening the condom, pulling it out, putting it on. You can fetishize that. And It's fun. So there's still
I love eating food when it's wrapped.
There's still a huge role. Now, I don't think many guys, I don't know any guy who gives head with condoms, but for fucking, a lot of guys like it. And it isn't always about the HIV thing. It's like, you know, I don't necessarily want shit on my dick.
And sometimes, you know, the guy is so gross.
I mean, it cleans you up. You know, you just take it off and...
Is that about the world of chocolate?
Is that up to... Well, that's a really nice segue.
We're not there yet, sweetheart.
That's down on Fausto's list.
That's later on the list, too.
After the tunnel of love, the world of chocolate.
So, see, well, you've done it
what
all.
What other topic?
Okay,
there
we're
go.
Done.
And thank you for listening.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Good night. I was like, what? You okay? Shut up, Mark. Okay, so let's talk about other topics that were brought up at the Gay Men's Health Summit. How does racism deal with gay men's health?
Well, I think it's really important because gay men are of all races, and it's proven time and again that, you know, black gay men, for instance, have less access to healthcare. And so that's structural racism. When folks, based on who they are or where they live, don't have the same access to healthcare that other people do, that there's something happening there. So we have to address it in our own community. And a lot of times people think, well, we're gay, we're already oppressed. We don't have issues around racism. Yes, we do. So there's serious structural issues that happen, but there's also that interpersonal, sociological, sociocultural shit where, you know, it wasn't that long ago on Halsted, white gay men got into a bar with one ID. Black gay men got into a bar with three IDs. Now, who the hell carries three IDs? And when you have that kind of pervasive, black is not normal, white is the norm, white is right, everything else is somehow played off of white, that plays havoc with people's mental health, and it has physical health consequences.
Well, also, I think it has consequences for all participants. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
People don't tend to look about racism as an aspect of giving racial minorities access to power, but they don't ever see how it affects them, how it limits their cultural expression, their quality of life.
Absolutely.
When you cut yourself off from a very vibrant, important demographic in your society, you're robbing yourself of the richness of their experience.
Absolutely. And you don't get to appreciate them for who they are whether you just demean them or you objectify them or you put them in a little box that they can't get out. If you appreciate them as long as they're in that little box, no one really wins in that situation. It's a lose-lose for all of us. And it's true. I mean, we all have a role to play in how we handle racism, and it's not just one way to the other. Certainly, when it's coming from someone who's in a position of power, it's different than coming from someone who's not. But racism can go black to white as well, and it can go all around in circles. It plays out differently when the person is a white male, has automatic privilege conferred upon him because of who he is. When he does something racist, it definitely has a different, you know, level to it than if someone, a black guy, does it.
Well, do you think that maybe like a lot of the rhetoric, the way we talk about the fighting for equality and justice, sometimes tends to be a little bit too accusatory and sort of looking at things in black and white and not shades of brown? In the sense of brown and yellow, you know.
Back to the tunnel of love.
Back to the tunnel of love. We'll get to that,
Mark. What can brown do for you?
Well, in the sense that we you know, that usually a lot of discussions on dealing with racial equality and fighting racism never really takes into consideration that we're living in a society where there's a lot of individuals who come from multiracial backgrounds.
Hello.
And some people, there are African Americans who appear as to be white people. There are white people who appear to not look white. They appear brown skinned. And we're becoming more and more aware of this in today's day and age. And I think like a lot of that experience gets to participate in these kind of discussions. It usually strikes me like when I've attended them, that you're in a set or a scene from Madea's family reunion, where she's usually an old black woman and she's had a little bit too much to drink and she's accusing
mad.
Everybody.
Yeah.
And she's caught up, you know, there's a lot of personal pain there. And we're not really looking. And I think like actually having Barack Obama as president, it does matter that he is a black man, that he is multiracial, that he has an outsider perspective, that he's bringing this very important viewpoint into the mainstream consciousness.
Right on. I think we make a mistake when we try to distill this down to something that's very easy and very binary and very clear. It isn't. It's a mess.
Well, I think, too, my frustration when I hear people talk about it the most of the times is how they try and negate it and say that, well, it's not as bad as it used to. It's not really that much of a part of somebody's life. It's, and it's just, especially when it comes from a white person's perspective, it's like, you don't know. You can't really speak about that. You can speak about racism and you can speak about its effects, but I feel that white people so often try and diminish what it is. And it's like, there's people out there that can't find jobs, can't get housing, can't get health care, just because of the color of their skin.
Right, and simple things. I mean, I've been in the situation where standing on a street and the black guy with me trying to hail the cab, he can't hail the cab. I can raise my hand and get a cab. What is that about?
That's
am
Chicago.
I better? I mean, am I a better person? You know, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I hate when people negate it. I think everyone has their experience. I think we don't want to get stuck. We're trying to work this out. We got to have these mm-hmm. discussions, and we don't want to boil it down to something that's simple. It's an ongoing thing. And as I think our society gets more multicultural, some of this will probably play itself out at some point. At some point, it's going to be harder to determine where we're all from.
But don't you think, like, you know, there's a blog called Stuff White People Like, and one of the things that they...
Like potatoes?
Well, they like... One of the things stuff white people like to do a lot is have discussions about racism.
Like but what we're doing right now.
Right now. I mean, you know, we're three white people. I mean, I'm Puerto Rican, but I'm racially white. And they like to sort of, like, discuss all these things, but actually not actually participate in finding a solution. Like, that, you know, having a discussion, writing a paper about it, it's great for stimulating your mind, but actually leaving the house and getting involved in something.
Well, and like we were talking at the summit, I mean, one way for a white person to get involved in racism in a real way is you're at the proverbial table, where you're at the table where decisions are made of whatever you're working on, and setting aside, moving aside and giving up your position at that table for someone else, instead of saying, well, you know what, I got your back, I understand black people, I'll make sure your things get brought up at this discussion. So step aside and let someone else take that position. Let other people in, share your privilege. That's a big thing that white people can do. We're given privilege just by being Caucasian, and we're able to share that. We're able to step aside and let other people in. And that's a real powerful thing we can do. And I think a lot of people don't think about that or don't do that. And they're doing it well-intentioned, right? They think they're a good person. I'll definitely speak for you. Don't worry. Got your back. But, you know, it's different. Me having someone's back is different than having that person at the table.
But how do you, like, avoid embracing diversity without being cliche, without looking like a Benetton ad and being like, okay, we have an Eskimo, an Asian, a black person, a white person, a chubby guy, we're done. You know?
If you can get them all in one, then you get to take off all the boxes.
Yeah.
You know, but it there's a racist aspect mm-hmm. to looking, you know, to wanting to have your group, your organization resemble some UN Children's Nation cliche. You know, and it's really like diversity is not just about racism; it's also about the perspective that individual brings.
Absolutely. Well, I don't think we should ever tokenize somebody, but I mean, I think we have to reach out and make opportunities and invite people in. And when we're looking for someone to fill a position or we're looking for someone to work with on a project, I mean, reach out beyond our comfort zone, maybe, and reach out beyond our immediate circle. And bring in new folks, and you shouldn't do it just based on the color of their skin. I mean, you want them to have the chops required for whatever it is that they're bringing. I mean, I love Barack Obama, and I love the fact that he's a biracial guy, but I'm voting for him because I think he's smart and accomplished and he's going to do a damn good job. And I would have thought that about him if he was if he was white, if he was whatever.
Well, it's sort of like saying, you know, it's like someone accusing you of being in love with your boyfriend because he has a big dick. Of like having a big dick is one of the things that I love about you, but your personality, your intelligence, your beauty, you know, your eye, the color of your eyes, the color of your soul and your spirit, all those things come into a factor. And I think that I think too many people have been spending a lot of time saying, I'm not voting for Barack Obama because he's black. I'm voting because he's inspiring and intelligent and beautiful and wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I think him being black is valuable.
Yeah.
I think it's extremely important. And you can't discredit. I want a good black president. Why not have Barack Obama? You know?
Because you're, but right the thing on. Is, though, that you're saying is it's not because of his color of his skin, but what his experience because of the color of his skin brings to the table.
Yeah. I mean,
that outsider
that informs him in a way that is going to give us leadership that we've never had before.
Oh, my God.
It's an exciting new, it's like getting a brand new iPod that actually does all the things iPods are supposed to do. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like when you got that first generation iPod, it was like, it just played music and you're like, okay,
and
this
it
is
screwed
great.
Up a lot. Right.
It screwed up a lot. And then today's, you know, like the iPhone, like will answer your phone call and make coffee for you and solve your problems and give you the astrological reading. And it sort of functions as is delivering a promise that we were made many years ago as children, that you said anybody can be president of the United States. And what does that mean? That any person with intelligence, anybody, meaning when you were told that as a child, you were like, you put yourself in that situation. It's like, I could be president.
Right. We're a free country.
Certainly and, Sarah Palin thinks it, right?
Oh, my Lord. No,
and I think, you know, anybody who's qualified, who's intelligent, I just don't think Sarah Palin, you know, God bless her, but I don't think she's a person who's qualified to be a leader.
You don't think she can do some fixing and some shaking
she'll get
up
in there and she'll
redistribute.
She believes
oh,
in
no,
it.
She doesn't like to redistribute.
Well, she used to
oh,
in Alaska.
Except in Alaska, she yes. likes to
well,
do that.
Well, we were talking, Mark and I were Miss talking about thing. This. It's like, you know, everybody's like, Obama's going to bring socialism, redistribute wealth.
Marxism.
I'm like, excuse me, but I think Bush has been redistributing wealth to the rich
Hello?
In this country, you know?
Well, and just the notion, I mean, government, that's what government does every government program. When we have someone build a highway, that's our funds being redistributed to make a highway. Mm-hmm. I mean,
how the hell, how is a government supposed to run without money?
And the thing is, though, too, it's like, it doesn't matter if it's big government or small government, it's just got to be good government, you know? And that's what you need. You
right
want
on.
A government that is going to do good work.
So right are on. You going to go to attend Obama's inauguration at Grant Park?
You know what?
It's not the inauguration.
What is it? The rally?
The
I don't even know what to call it.
Celebration of his...
Can we watch that from that room we're going to be in? Because we're teaching a class that night. I wonder if we'll be able to see
I
it
doubt
that
we'll let
Where
us
Where are you at, like
there.
Columbia or something?
We're going to be at Columbia College the same night.
Is that close?
Yeah.
I put in my media requests.
Do you do a media request?
I did a media request and I also did a request to attend it.
Okay.
Because you have to actually get a ticket. I was actually not going to go because I thought it was a free-for-all, mm-hmm. like the 4th of July. And I was like, I'm not going to be downtown with a mob of people. But it's actually going to be a ticketed event. So you got to go to barackobama.com. And
they're out, honey. They're
you
got to
get tickets.
Out. You had to have gotten a ticket like from their campaign.
Yeah.
If you donated or if you're on their list or
I'm on their list. I donated.
Of course you are, honey.
But I don't know.
I'm going to be in D.C. Unfortunately, I'm going to be in our nation's capital.
Really doing what?
I have a meeting, so I have to be there. I'm flying in Tuesday, so I'll be there Tuesday night. So hopefully they'll be dancing in the streets in DuPont Circle.
Well, hopefully
that's the gay area of town,
yeah that's
right?
the gay area
don't take anything for granted and we're
no,
up for
no.
the podcast awards yeah. two fabulous awards this to People's Choice and Best GLBT and I'm counting everybody's votes on a daily basis. Jim, you've been voting.
I have
right?
voted. Now how much longer can we vote?
Till every day until November 6th
at podcastawards.com. People, please, it's about giving respect
about
and honor
giving.
To this channel. Don't vote for me, don't vote for Mark, don't vote for Jim Pickett, vote for the podcast where we all come together,
because it's for everybody. I mean, we've had so many guests on the show and so many people have commented on the show or written emails, you know, it's for all of us as a community.
It's where we come together. So
that's
go to podcastawards.com and cast your vote. Hey, do you realize that today's Feast of Fools show is brought to you in part by AdamandEve.com?
Hey, Feast of Fools listeners, we've got a special offer just for you.
Go to AdamandEve.com and get 50% off just about any item when you type in Feast at the offer code coupon at checkout. Plus, with your order of $17 or more, they're going to throw in a free gift.
Get half off with offer code Feast at AdamandEve.com. I want a fleshlight.
You want a fleshlight?
Yeah, I want to try one of those if anybody wants to buy me one for Christmas.
Oh, that is... Look, 50% off is a huge discount there.
I know.
And with the way the economy is today, you can't afford not to shop at AdamandEve.com.
Because a fleshlight's like $70, so half off, is that right?
$35.
Wow.
Do the math.
You guys can get off cheap because, you know, Fausto's not always around. So
sometimes you gotta stick it in a can of goo. And, you know, peanut butter is getting very expensive these days, people. Mm-hmm. No, but seriously, like, you know, a lot of people spend some money on lube, and they usually spend about $20 mm-hmm. when they go to a regular store to buy it, those little itty bitty bottles of it. And when you go to adamandeve.com, they knock off the price half off there of retail.
Half.
So you're going to get, I mean, discount prices for quality merchandise. AdamandEve.com. People, remember, it's AdamandEve.com, not Adam and Steve. So what is the big obstacle, big challenge that gay men have when talking and embracing their sexuality? Is it the butthole?
Oh, this is a nice segue.
This is a segue.
This is a segue.
You intelligently
into the tunnel of love.
Make sure you draw attention. Is it the butthole? Is this why this is the end of the year forum for the Project Chris Life Lube?
The Feast end of the year.
Well, it is
the bottom of our programming.
I can get behind that. I think gay men have, just like every human being, has issues about their butt, and there's stigma and shame attached to it that stems back from potty training, right? Because I think when you're little, you don't know, like, your butt's bad or that poop is bad. Like, you play with poop. I used to play with poop until I was told it was bad a couple years ago.
No. Delicious.
When I was when you're a kid, you're like, you know, it's whatever, it's all natural. And then,
well, kids are fascinated by poop because they're like, look what I made.
Right, you're shamed. And so I think we have issues around that. And we have the whole feminization, masculinization of who's top, who's bottom, and power dynamics. So I think that all plays in. And then we're just embarrassed about our butt, you know, like, we like to get fucked, or we like to fuck, but actually taking care of it, we're not so good because we're a little bit embarrassed.
So do you think, is this a situation about getting mentally and physically prepared for the act of anal sex, or is it a situation about keeping your butt healthy when you're not having sex?
Well, both. I think this forum that we're going to do on November 18th is going to explore all of that. It's going to explore the sexual aspects, but also, like, how to keep it happy and healthy all the time. And, you know, like, taking your psyllium husk and...
Yes, I have the new thing. So I've been, I've been struggling with hemorrhoids.
Oh.
Well, see, this is an interesting thing. Both of you guys, we were talking about this before we were taping, and both of you guys should be embracing this kind of topics.
I'm embracing your hemorrhoids. Mm-hmm. I want to see them.
Well, they're not really hemorrhoids, topics.
Are they?
It's not.
Have you seen them, Mark?
It's not It's not an inflation.
I haven't looked
inflation.
At him in his big brown eye. No, I have not. But
I think hemorrhoids is a word to describe a broad range of problems that people can have with their
tell
anus.
It, sister.
Yes.
And so I've been doing a lot of research online as somebody who has to pay for health care. I'm avoiding yet to see a doctor because I've actually got taken care of it. And one of the things is that if you go through a course of antibiotics, it tends to kill the flora and fauna found in your butthole. And it tends to irritate your anal canal, which can lead to a condition with hemorrhoids.
I always felt like it dried my ass out.
What, antibiotics?
Yeah, antibiotics. It made me feel like, oh, God, it would, like, I don't know, it would just dry it out.
You need to lotion it up or something?
Yeah, I would actually put some Preparation H on there because I was
and
just
it
like,
helps.
And it helps. It helps. Mm. But the thing is, though, too, is what you want to do is you want to get your flora back.
And right. So, Mark, I have always been a big proponent of fags, which is fiber.
I love fags.
Acidophilus. Go take a quick shit and soaking in a tub.
But is it a quick shit? Shouldn't it be a long luxury? I mean, it's when it's quick. Isn't that bad?
You don't want to spend a lot of time.
Oh, right. You don't want to strain too long. Right?
And I didn't realize that it's like a universal condition that people, when they sit on the can, they tend to be very meditative, and they like to, because it's psychologically, it's relaxing.
I'll tell you why that is.
Can I finish saying and then you can join
in? Okay, go ahead.
Grocery store, and I was waiting to use the bathroom, and this guy was like taking a crap, and he starts like checking his voicemail. And I'm like top knocking in the door. I'm like, dude, I gotta go too, you know? And the guy was like taking 15 minutes going through his voicemail
you
while he was taking
him?
A poop. Yeah, because it's, you know, he's using the
oh, right, so you can hear the little lady. Listens. Yeah, yeah.
Like, press two to, you know, get the thing. And I said, this really illustrates that we tend to treat taking a poop as like checking, you know, your email. And now with portable devices, you can do that.
Well, because actually, I don't know what the exact nerve is or exactly how it works, but they say there's actually a nerve in your anus that actually causes you to relax. So the act of pooping, and that's why we lock our door and we want privacy, because the response, you have a physical response of relaxation,
really,
when you take a shit. And I think that's probably part of the reason why so many people like to get fucked. It's not just all about the prostate and, you know, everything else that's going on down there. But because of that, you know, because look who likes to get fucked most of the time, with these uptight bitches, right?
Whoa!
I'm just kidding.
That's a little harsh.
But I think you're tapping into something there.
And so what happens is they get fucked and then they can go about their business and become normal people and they calm the fuck down.
So people who tend to be in their everyday lives easily agitated, upset... Sorry, I just looked
at you. Who are we looking at? Me easily agitated and upset? I don't know.
Tend to gravitate. If you have that type of personality, you probably tend to be gravitating to actually being
to being a power bottom.
To being a power bottom, because you get a lot of pleasure from stimulating that nerve.
And the other thing is like what you also carry a lot of stress in your hips. Like in yoga teaches you, you carry stress in like your shoulders and in your hips because they're supporting a lot of weight. So like also getting fucked, you know, opens that a lot too.
Well, I just want to say, can I just say one thing? Just, you know, the doctor stuff, come to the forum, Dr. Will Wong.
Mm-hmm. We'll be
the gay doctor from the Chicago Department of Public Health, who's adorable.
Because we could be crazy.
We'll be talking all about, like, we could be telling you all kinds of bullshit, but he's a doctor.
I'd be like, that's bullshit.
Yeah. He's a real doctor.
He'll have a little sign that he'll hold up when we're saying this kinds of things. Bullshit.
Or actually,
that's not a bad thing.
Because I was reading that fiber, psyllium husk, a lot of people don't get enough fiber, and when you're low on fiber in your diet, you're poops, your tool,
bowel movement,
your bowel movements tend to be drier.
Your Hershey droplets.
tend to be actually drier in moisture.
Oh, yeah.
And it tends to irritate as it exits your body. Ah. So you want to have moisture in that stool.
Mm-hmm.
And so putting fiber actually adds moisture to it, which makes it easier to get rid of.
Because it sucks up water,
yes.
Right? The fiber is like a sponge, right?
As opposed to, you know, like a horse when it, you know, have you ever seen a horse poop? It's like grass all... put together.
That's a wonderful image.
So, and then another was reading is that a lot of our listeners love to sit in the computer for hours and hours on end. A lot of people have desk jobs. Sitting for 8 hours a day or sitting for a long period of times aggravates your anus as well. So you have to stand up and walk around.
It makes your anus angry. My anus is so angry.
Anus smash.
So you might want to take a little coffee break or while you're listening to this podcast
Go finger your anus.
Go walk around the block. Just simply
finger your anus. Come back and sit down. Wash your hands.
So how did you get your flora back up? You took the acidophilus pills.
That's yogurt. What I've been doing. I've been doing it twice a day, taking my multiple acidophilus. Mm-hmm. But you're also a big proponent of fermented foods.
Fermented foods. I was eating because I went on antibiotics too, and like I said, it dried my ass out. And I was just like, so I had to get my flora back up. So I did some investigating on some probiotic foods and stuff like that. This isn't science, but so I ate yogurt and I ate sauerkraut and pickles.
And why sauerkraut and pickles?
Because they're probiotic and they also have some kind of bacteria in them too that's good for your gut. They say.
That's an awful. Sauerkraut? I don't like sauerkraut. I'm from Milwaukee, and I just don't like it. I love pickles.
Well, you got to get the kind.
I love me some pickles.
The refrigerated kind. So the refrigerated sauerkraut and the refrigerated.
You want the fresh?
Because otherwise, if they're sterilized, like the ones that are just on the shelf.
Oh, they need to be in the fridge.
They need to be the refrigerated ones.
Okay. Or you can go like kimchi or Japanese style.
I like that stuff.
Yeah,
that's sauerkrauty. That's cabbagey, right?
Yeah, it's Asian sauerkraut basically.
But I like that better than the German kind. Sorry, Germans.
I'll make you some. You'll like it.
You just came back from the doctor and you got an anal pap smear.
I got my first anal pap smear.
What is that? It just sounds awful.
Well, yeah, pap smears used to be just for the ladies up front. Now they're for everyone in back. And basically, they're looking for precancerous cells. If you have like HPV or cancer down there, they can't really like treat it, but they can cut it out or cut out precancerous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just looking for that. And what it is like this weird little Well, they, you know, you have to bend over and spread them. It's very, it's not lovely. I mean, you're.
But it's quick, right?
Yeah, it's pretty quick. But yeah, I don't want to scare people. But, you know, it's not like, you know.
They take a toothbrush or something?
It's kind of like a little brush short, you know, and you kind of swirl it around and then they put it in a little cup and send it to the lab. So that's what happened to me yesterday.
I think they just take it home and sniff it.
But you know, I was
and then they tell, like, you whatever they,
you know, that's
tell
funny
you.
There actually are dogs out there that can smell cancer. There was a woman that she had like cancer on her leg and her dog would keep sniffing it and stuff like that, and so she went to the doctor and the doctor said, yeah, it's cancer, and they did other tests, and if a dog can
can smell illness,
can smell your breath to see if you have like lung cancer or something like that.
I've seen that on the TV.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no, it is crazy. Like, dogs have that. Well, they have such a super power.
Super smell.
Yeah.
Well, they should train dogs to sniff out.
But, you know, but men now, I guess the thing, especially for gay men and sexually active gay men, it's, you know, recommended to get a pap smear, an anal pap, after you're 40, like every year. Mm-hmm. So get used to it. I don't know if you guys are 40 yet, but.
Marcus.
I am. And so you got to start doing this every year.
I think like I'm 40, so I might as well get it.
Go ahead and get a pap smear.
So it's not that big. Is it possible?
Will Wong will tell us more about pap smears on November 18th.
Okay.
I mean, I'm surprised that you don't hear like public cervix announcements for it. You know?
Well, it's just becoming a standard of care. There's been a lot of discussion about it the last couple of years, and it's just now really coming into its own. As like my doctor said, he just started offering it in their practice as a regular part of the care this year. So.
Well, that's why you learn new things on the Feast of Fools, getting on the cutting edge of health
anal
and
paps,
medicine.
Honey.
Is it possible to be too clean in your butthole?
Yeah, I
don't know, but we had a friend who was a bartender, and he was telling me that he goes, I went and had to see a doctor, and my friends were experiencing the same thing because their ass started itching a lot, and they couldn't figure out why. Well, when he had figured out, he said, "What do you do down there?" And he said, "Well, after I poop, I wipe it with toilet paper, then I wipe it with a wet wipe, and then I wipe dry it with another piece of toilet paper." He's just like, "You're cleaning your ass too much that you shouldn't, you know, because what's in the wet wipes?"
Well, the thing about that they put in some of those wet wipes are antibacterials. And again, if you're killing, you don't want to put anything that's antibacterial in your butthole.
Right, because you have to really think about it, too.
So just like a little bit of warm water and some love to clean it out.
Your butt is like your lips. Would you like clean your lips with whatever's in a wet wipe?
Probably not.
You know? No. To dry them out.
Yeah, so you would treat your butthole like you would treat your lips.
Did you know your mouth is a sphincter?
It's your it's your delicate rosebud. You should treat it like the flower that it is.
Do they sell chapstick for your butt?
That could be a niche.
The life lube.
Yeah. So you guys can join us. That's going to be Tuesday, November the 18th at 6 p.m. at the Center on Halsted for the live public forum with Dr. Wong and J.C. Carter and Jim Pickett answering your questions about butt health and your concerns and your ideas. What are your ways to keep your booty happy, healthy, and fabulous?
And we should talk about J.C. Carter quickly. Sure not everyone may know. He's an accomplished porn star. He lives in Chicago. Mm-hmm. He's a hottie, and he's both a top and a bottom. And he's going to be talking about keeping that bottom ready to go for hot porn scenes. And he's going to give us the inside dirt on how it all happens,
because those porn scenes take a long time. So I you know, you might think about getting fucked and maybe it's 10 minutes or half an hour, but sometimes they have to go for hours at a time.
Should everybody try to strive to have their sex lives match what they see in a porn? Probably not, but you can always learn something from a porn star and use those tips and tricks to make it fabulous.
Yeah. And he's
free.
A nice guy. I think he'll be fun.
And this event is going to be free.
Free.
It
food.
Is sponsored by a whole range of organizations. Do you want to do a shout out to the sponsors?
I mean, there's a lot. So, yeah.
But Abbott Laboratories has been paying for.
Well, they're paying for some of the ads. We don't, you know. Yeah. Thank you, Abbott. But they're not, you know, they
Project
pay for
Chris,
some ads. Let's just
LifeLib.org, Steamworks.
No. Steamworks, definitely.
And us and you guys all working together to make the world a better place. You got to RSV. VP at lifeloop.org. Reserve your space because it is expected to sell out.
And scat queens are welcome.
It's free.
Everyone's welcome. But yes, special seating for scat queens.
We'll have a scat queen section.
Are you going to do like something special like you did last time? All the people who blog about it, Jim is going to put together like a follow-up of all the bloggers who wrote about
it. Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I encourage everyone to blog it, Twitter it, Facebook it, MySpace, whatever it, everything it, Ning it.
And coming up on Wednesday, December 3rd, is going to be the World of Chocolate, which is the premier fundraiser for the AIDS Foundation of Chicago. It's going to be at the Hilton downtown. It costs $75 to get in, and you get to taste the chocolate imagination, the expression of probably how many of over 20 or 40.
Yeah, it's a whole bunch of vendors
of Chicago's greatest chocolatiers and restaurants and catering companies. Mm-hmm. And it's a celebrity packed event with us running amok.
Yes.
And Kathy Brock and her son, Matt.
Of course, it would not be World of Chocolate without Brock and her son.
You know, at this point, it's like every year, the first time we met
watching
Kathy
him grow
Brock,
up.
We're watching him grow up through the years, you know, and the first time we met him, he was like, it was this kind of like,
Your hair is blue.
Is that what he said? Was that the first? That's so cute.
And then the following year was like, Mom, it's those guys. And then the year after that, it's like,
it's you again.
Hey,
he's like, hey, what up?
And then the year,
what up? I saw you on Facebook, yo.
And then last year, he's like, hey, Fausto, hi, Mark, how you doing? Mm. And the mother's like giving us hugs. It's like we're part of the family.
But what I like about World of Chocolate, it's not just drinking the chocolate drinks or eating the chocolate, but seeing these fabulous creations that these people make. I mean, some of these things are just over the top: chocolate rivers, big giant chocolate balls,
and the most delicious stuff. Like interesting combinations. I mean, it's a complete, yeah, it's a paradise.
To attend, and you can, you know, because it costs so much money to attend these lavish gala fundraisers for these very important nonprofit organizations, but this is $75 and every penny goes to fighting for AIDS.
Yep.
And I think it's a really great charity. It's a wonderful event. Obviously, you're here involved with it, but yeah. I think it's really inventive, and it's one of those kind of things that just doesn't match. It's the event of the year that you want to attend.
That's so nice. Thank you. Yeah, I think it's become really, really popular and people look forward to it.
When was it not popular?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think it was really popular the very first year it happened, but every year it just like exponentially goes up a notch, you know?
Is that cause problems? Like in the sense that maybe it becomes too popular?
Well, we're growing out of spaces. I mean, we've moved a couple of spaces. Yeah. Because there's just not enough room to get all those people and all that chocolate into one space.
It's a lot of chocolate.
Now we're at the Hilton, which has an enormous space. And, you know, we'll see. I don't know what happens after that. I mean, where do we go?
United Center. With
we'll
Michael
have Cher
Jordan.
Open. And
I mean, it's. I think it's a fantastic event. And yeah. what really great is you get to see all the like who's who of the queer community in Chicago socializing, drinking chocolate martinis. And, you know, it's an open bar.
Mm-hmm. Did we mention that?
Did open I mention bar. That? $75. Well, it's a hosted bar is hosted. The term. That means somebody else pays for the tab.
Well, you paid for your ticket.
You pay for your ticket.
It's a private event.
But it's a private event. And somebody, you know, in other words, you can drink as much. I recommend people get
there
early.
You got to be careful, though, because you want to have more than chocolate on your stomach when you're drinking martinis.
So what I recommend, since it's a Wednesday.
Do you? Maybe not.
take Thursday off of work. Make sure you get off work early on Wednesday. Go home, get your tuxedo on, get your formal attire on, go eat dinner.
You don't
beforehand.
Have to wear a tuxedo. It's very casual.
Yeah,
don't
tell people to wear a tuxedo.
I think it's very
casual. Well, you could if you wanted to, but
I mean, most people are like maybe in a suit.
Dress
maybe.
To impress people. And you go downtown, have dinner, and then go to the World of Chocolate. Get there early because the lines start forming.
You missed a step. They should
what?
Definitely rent a hotel room in at the Hilton.
And yeah, that's nice.
Invite us up for an after party.
And you know,
great.
And in terms of having dinner, we should just say that you can. We always have like ham sandwich, like
yeah, there's food
like
there.
Meat, food.
You know, but I just never. I like to have a full stomach before I go.
Well, hello, and I'm sure you do your fags routine well before that, so you feel very
it's
cleaned
the same
out
with, it's
and
the same
fresh.
With marking like when he goes out and drinking.
Does he
like,
mark the X?
He does the fags. He marks the X.
For me, it's
so
like
good.
I'm just a terrible food critic, or because it all tastes good to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm always like,
it's so good.
You know, it's like I can't talk too much about a reality show that I participated in recently.
We can say what it was.
Well, a check, please.
Yes, you're on
and
check.
I can't
please.
Give the outcome, but I just say that I
say
gave everything a
but
very.
But everything was delicious.
Everything. It was sort of hard to be negative about something because it was just like, oh, I really liked eating that. I really liked eating this. I feel like Homer Simpson, and this, you know, it was like, you know.
Well, that's food, nice, because you know food. What? I love Chuck, please, but I get annoyed with people who get on there and they're like really persnickety and complaining about things. It's just like, oh, shut up.
Just relax.
Yeah, honey,
lady.
Just enjoy. Yeah. Like, it couldn't have been that bad. I mean, it's someone's favorite restaurant in the world, so it's not awful.
So I can't tell you who was on the show or what the show was about, but I have to say that Alpana Singh is a master broadcaster and sitting.
And a master sommelier.
And a master sommelier, but yeah. Seeing her sitting there and in her element and shining and her eyes sparkling with the cameras and her makeup, it was really wonderful, you know, because this is a friend of mine, but at the same time, I've never seen her in action on set.
Yeah.
And that was really special.
On her turf. On her turf.
And it's hard
and she
to
does
be,
really good, doesn't she? Really
well. You know what's funny, though, is because so the studio there, this. I've heard people talk about how small that studio is and stuff like that. And so I thought, well, I guess it must be really small. They're like, they described it as though it was very small. I walked in there, it's this enormous, huge room. And I'm like,
it's a cavern.
And I'm like, this studio's huge. I'm like, and I'm
what
like,
are they complaining
but
about?
But I'm comparing it to my living room. And I'm like, well, because our living room is our studio.
This is your studio, you
know?
Right?
So it's like, it's gigantic compared to that. So I don't know. Maybe they were in a different
studio. Do they keep it cold? Like,
it's ice cold. I was free. I had a complaint.
Really?
I said, I am freezing to death.
Really? You were cold?
I was free. Because you get nervous too. And you're not in your element. You're sort of an outsider in that situation. You want to look good. You want to be funny. Mm-hmm. And you're just not, you never get prepared enough. And so when the cameras are rolling, they're like, what do you think about this restaurant? And you're like,
did you wear a panda suit?
No.
I didn't. I should have.
But you know, Alpana says that she dressed her dog and has a panda outfit for her dog. I said, send me the pictures. We'll put it on the website.
That's cute.
She still hasn't sent pictures of her dog yet.
Pandas are going to be very big for Halloween, I think.
Well, I think you're onto something, clearly.
Mm-hmm. We're tapping into the subconscious of America. Maybe the panda is not a critique, but an embracing Barack Obama's multiracial background.
Oh, he's white and black.
You going to give into that theory now? Because people were asking me, like, is this representative of Barack Obama? I'm like, no, it's just a panda.
But maybe subconsciously we picked into that.
No,
it's just a gay panda, for Christ's sake.
It's because there's a lot of Asians that go to the parade.
But so I mean, we could have been anything.
This is a pander to the Asian.
We could have been gay
dragons. We're pandering to the Asians.
Constituency.
Because we're Asian baiting is what we're doing. Because we'll get all the Korean hot young Korean students here studying English coming me up and, you know,
grabbing
tugging
us.
At us and grabbing
that's
us and, like,
a good
having pictures and we'll be like, you know,
oh yeah,
caressing them,
I love
and
it
taking care of them.
I mean, we could have dressed up as koi, we could have dressed up as dragons,
yes.
We could have dressed up as what else is Asian and animal like
but I figured panda would be easiest.
And the panda right. really was
because we're thinking panda and then like idea. Maybe dragon or something else, but koi would have been good. You could have been a nice koi. Do a fish face for me. Ooh, that's good.
Fuck you.
Very koi like.
Fuck you.
And now I pet you. I pet my pet koi.
Ugh, oh, that I can't stand food. Those koi.
I really? Just, I love koi.
They're disgusting.
I like the ones that are like pearl and opalescent.
So they smell, the water always smells bad. And then they're always like,
they poop in it.
Pellets.
Mm-hmm.
And you throw those pellets in and the pellets smell bad. And it's like, ugh. It's like you eat something that smells
well,
like.
Well, they have koi in the Lincoln Park pond over here that they just, they're draining it. And they're getting rid of all the unnatural elements like the koi. They're just gonna I guess kill them.
They're gonna fry them up and sell it at Harold's Fried Chicken
but like Shack. the native turtles Carp. And the frogs and stuff like that, they're gonna try and save all of them,
but they're gonna get rid of the
anything that's non-native species
because
that stuff just wreaks havoc with the ecosystem.
So what's up with the Carpenter's Halloween?
What's up with it? We saw it last night. You finally saw it this year. I saw it this year a couple weeks ago when I recommended it to all our listeners. There's only 1 week left, so if you want to see it, go
through
see
next
it.
Week?
Yeah, it's going to be through the 6th, November 6th.
Oh, good, 6th, good, good.
Because they're going to have a special show on Halloween, and then they're going to have an election night thing that's going to start early, and then they're going to watch the election afterwards. So it's this Thursday, Friday, and then next week.
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, right?
Just Tuesday and Wednesday.
There's... I thought it goes to the 6th.
No, it goes 4th
to
and the
5th.
Yes.
To the 5th?
I just talked to Eric Daly, who told me that there's one more show after the election.
I got to go.
Oh, yeah, you got to go.
So go to ScootyJojo.com.
Is it on Saturday?
No.
No.
No, it's so go to ScootyJojo.com to learn more about the fabulous Carpenter's Halloween. It is a mashup show of reenacting the film Halloween set to an all Carpenter's musical score. And I have to say that this year's production from last year is a universe away. I thought all the elements that I disliked from last year, which was that it took too long, that they had elements that were in sequence. Mm-hmm. This year, they had a lot of those elements on top of each other. So when somebody's getting killed, the cast is singing close to you or singing. and there's a real humorous aspect to it. But last year, it was just like the guy got killed and then they sang close to you. And that was like
so it's boring. Timing.
Yeah.
So how they kind of make it.
It was very efficient. The props were humorous.
The sets were colored this year. Did anybody say to you anything about the sets being colored
this
year?
They didn't. They gave you hell for that.
Yeah, they did.
Because they don't dare to tell me that.
Well, they'll tell me.
Because I'll be like,
well, we also didn't stick around afterwards and drink. I did last time.
But so. I have to say that. Does it look better?
It does look better. So you did not give them bad advice.
Ignore my advice at your own peril.
You hear that, Jim?
I heard it, honey.
Have I ever steered you wrong?
You have never.
I never steer you wrong. I mean, when I give something, I'm not just trying to be nosy or a know-it-all. I'm speaking from experience and speaking from the heart. And I have to say that Carpenter's Halloween is one of the most unique and interesting and funniest shows happening now in Chicago. So definitely go check it out. Highly recommended. I didn't recommend it last year.
No, you didn't.
I gave it a thumbs down last year. I give it a thumbs up this year. So absolutely.
And it's selling out. So make your reservations early.
And show up early to get good seats because it's a tight space and you definitely want to be sitting in the center so you can get the full visual effect because it is extremely well, not just cast, but I think executed visually with the props and when you're doing a show like this, there's so many things that can go wrong and there's all these little things that have to happen in sequence and they do it all flawlessly, at least the night we saw it. So
yeah,
I'm psyched now.
So are you and Kevin going to go see it?
We are. We've been talking about it and you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, it's going to close. So we're going to make sure it happens.
You don't want to miss
it on Halloween or something.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things that, you know,
that's a good idea.
Makes Chicago a great city is these experimental, wacky, over-the-top theater companies, and Scooty and JoJo are shining. I'm looking forward to what they're doing next now.
Fun, you know? Definitely. Next.
I am. It's like, I don't know. What I really like about them is that they tend to like do mashups. So they don't really see themselves as a theater company. They're more like a pageant.
What does that mean?
Well, they're just like, I really like Tron and I like drag queens and I like, you know, musicals.
So let's make it work.
Let's put that all together and do a Tron musical. The Tranny musical.
Yeah, that's cute. I like that. I like those mashup ideas. They're more fun, really. And it's like they don't take themselves seriously either. They're just out having a great time.
And what's going on with the woman who got arrested for cursing at her malfunctioning toilet?
So Don Herber from Scranton, Pennsylvania, we reported this earlier of this year, or maybe it was last year. She cursed at her toilet because it was overflowing. She was having problems with it. And she was swearing so much that her neighbor next door that's an off-duty cop heard her and arrested her for having foul language. And so she had to go to court, right? Well, she was eventually found not guilty because then she was actually awarded almost $24,000 in compensation because they say that the cop overstepped his bounds in arresting her for swearing because she was in her own home. He heard her through a window.
I want to be arrested by a cop and then be given $24,000.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, now she can afford
that. How does that happen?
She can afford a new toilet now.
One that she doesn't. I hope she's not cursing at her new toilet. Be like, these water efficient toilets. Like,
I love you for giving me all that money, toilets. How's that for redistributing wealth?
Redistributing it quite nicely.
Like the way the Alaskans do it.
The Alaskans.
So if you live in Alaska, do you like get a check every year?
You do. You get a big old fat ass check.
Sarah comes over and like gives you a back rub and stuff. Ugh. You know? To all the proletariat.
I want her son, Track.
Yes.
To not Trig.
I want to show him what liberalism is really like.
Trek is the hottie.
Yeah,
he's the one who's in
Iraq.
I think he's there. Yeah,
probably that's probably a good. He probably cannot get away fast enough.
He probably is so happy to be in Iraq right now.
He's like, I'm a million miles away
from my mother.
Thank God, I'm awful woman.
Instead of living at the White House. Oh, wait. We weren't going to live at the White House.
No, honey.
Where does the vice president live?
Will she disappear? He lives in a
Blair House. Underground.
And where?
I think it's called Blair House.
Blair House?
Yeah.
Blair House, I'm sure it's a nice place,
it
too.
It is a nice place. And I think they put up other people there, too, on occasion. Like visiting dignitaries.
Like a crash pad.
Yeah, I think so. They have parties there. That's what they have parties there.
Yeah, I bet Dick Cheney has great parties.
Remember to go to adamandeve.com and with the offer code at the end, FEAST, you're going to get a savings on lube. With the economy the way it is today, people, don't use Crisco. Just go to adamandeve.com and save half off of your lube purchase.
Mm-hmm. That's a deal.
That's a deal. So you can use the fancy
lube. And lube is good for your booty.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You shouldn't be fucking without lube.
Yeah, well lubricated.
Okay. Keep it lubed.
Lube Jim,
it
up. promote your blog.
Please visit lifeloop.org. It's great. Sexual health, mental health, emotional health, some fun, some eye candy.
And if somebody goes up to you and says, I read your blog, Jim, what will you do for them in person?
I say, thank you, sir.
No, you'll give them $100.
You know what? You know what? That's a really good idea. I will. I will give you $100.
Of love.
Of love.
Thank you, everybody.
A big embrace.
The music featured on today's show is the music of Liberace. The song Near You from his album Best of Liberace is available on our website, feastoffools.net. Support dead gay men.
Bye, everybody.
It's a scholarship fund.
It is a scholarship fund. Bye.
Bye.